Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Come on, give me one.
No.
Even if it's replay the promo tape.
Replay the promo?
Sure.
All right, you'll have to give me a couple of minutes.
Couple of minutes? It's a computer. You can call it up in seconds.
Not that fast.
Oh, you have to be kidding me.
It's give me a couple minutes. I'll get it.
Forget it. Let's bring in Corey Geiger, the Altoona Mirror. Thanks to Matt Park, the play-by-play voice of Syracuse football, who joined us in the previous half hour. Corey, no starting quarterback named by Bill O'Brien. No surprise, really. Your thoughts on all this?
I think it's great. We don't know for either team. And, I asked Bill at that press conference a week and a half ago, well, what's the benefit of naming a starter? Do you have to? And I wrote something saying, why would anybody name a starter? Why would anybody put out depth charts for that reason? And if you're in Penn State's shoes and you're dealing with the scholarship issues, then take every competitive advantage that you can get. I kind of wrote it tongue-in-cheek a little bit, thinking, well, obviously Bill's going to name a starter. But frankly, guys, I love the fact that he's not naming a starter. Don't give Syracuse and Scott Schaefer any reason whatsoever to feel like they know what's going to happen at the start of the game.
Well, I think once Scott Schaefer was blunt about the fact that he wasn't going to do it, I think that sealed the deal at that particular point. Because the opening game is the one game you can. After that, everybody has a depth chart. Everybody,
right.
You see it like visibly play out in front of you. As an opener, and of course the irony is, Corey, that Penn State will not play an opening game at Beaver Stadium until 2016. They're on the road for all their other openers between now and then. So how intrigued are you by this one?
I think it's a great opener. It's traditional rivals. It's two Eastern rivals. It's good to have Syracuse and or Pitt on a schedule in a given year for Penn State. I think it's fantastic. Now, it's not a Florida International. It's not an Indiana State. And I am picking Penn State to win, and I think they'll win, by double digits. But this is a Division I opponent that went 8-5 last year, and Syracuse has had a lot of success in football, not so much for the past decade, but they are a Division I program. They're going to line up, and they're going to hit you. They're going to have similar-sized players as Penn State. They're going to have roughly similar-sized speed. I think Penn State's players are going to be better, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But that's the big test, Steve, is coming right out of training camp where I understand the thud. I get it. And Bill O'Brien was wise to implement the thud. But now you're going to get hit. You're not going to get hit by, low-level Division I or Division I AA players. You're going to get hit by players your own size. So the only concern I would have would be that maybe Penn's not quite ready physically. I don't think that's a big deal, but with the depth issues, you've got to keep everybody healthy.
Corey, to be honest with you, I've seen so many thuds in my lifetime. There's no real difference. You really do get hit. You just don't deck them to the ground. In terms of, so there's nobody getting up off the ground, but you get hit. I mean, not only that, you get hit pretty hard. Too. It's not just like, oh, here you are, and it's not too in touch. So I think fans are going to – I don't think they're going to see any problem in that area at all. In fact, most teams have gone in that direction. Just to give fans just a brief education, I think most teams have actually done this, especially in the NFL, believe it or not. The next part of this is that the Big Ten, especially now with the 9-game schedule coming up, they want all the FCS teams off there, and I think that's one of the best moves they could make.
I agree, Steve. These games against these dregs of 1AA, I don't want to see it. Fans don't want to see it. I think it's unfair to fans to have that be one of your 7 or 8 home games. Yeah. We saw it enough over the years. I mean, Indiana State when they scheduled that game, I think Indiana State was something like 1-51 over the last 4 years.
Right.
So, I'm a big fan of trying to, you know, schedule as much as you possibly can in the non-conference. But I think you both know the issue with the non-conference schedule over the next few years is that, well, you want to schedule some wins. You want to get some confidence going into Big Ten play.
Yeah.
But you don't want to schedule just terrible opponents because you do need fans in Beaver Stadium. So that's really the fine line they have to walk here over the next few years.
Well, also, too, I mean, moving forward, let's even take this 10 years in advance of here. You want to put together a non-conference schedule, at least has some BCS meat to it. Because if you want to compete for the national championship or get into the Final Four, that RPI is going to be taken into account. It has to.
Yeah. Steve, I agree there, and I've said this 20 times. All things being even, this is what I think of Bill O'Brien. All things being even, which obviously they're not, but if we could go, you know, have that wish, all scholarships even, everything. I think Penn State would be in national championship contention within 5 years.
Yeah.
I think that highly of Bill O'Brien. I think he is an innovative, creative, offensive mind. And while I think the defense might fall off a little bit because it's always been a great defensive program, I think there will still be very good defense played. That's really the sad aspect of these whole sanctions, because who knows if Bill O'Brien will even be there in 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But if he were to be post-sanctions, I think Penn State could really be a major player on the national stage.
The Big Ten is going to allow replays in the stadium of all plays, including the ones, and this is something, gee, Brian, have I campaigned for this?
More than any politician.
That they should be showing it. I mean, and I felt that the stadium experience has to be better than the home experience.
And I was a lobbyist for it.
I mean, and they're finally going to do it. I mean, this is common sense, don't you think?
Steve, I've heard you talk about that point several times recently, and I agree with you 100%. I think it's a great idea for what you mentioned about with the money that the fans are having to pay to go to games. Hey, look. I can sit back and watch my 50-inch big-screen TV in my living room, mm-hmm, with the air conditioner set or the heater set in the winter or whatever. You've got to make the stadium experience as good as what you can get at home. I completely agree. Here's what ends up happening. When we're in the press box covering games, be it Neil Riddell, Mark Brennan, all of us throughout the state that are covering these games, we know less in the press box than the fans know at home. Because they're getting the benefit of all these replays, the Matt Lehman play at Nebraska. I mean, we didn't get to see a definitive or even a close replay of that in the press box. So what ends up happening is you're in the stadium, you're either a fan or you're working. You don't really have anywhere near as good of an idea what's going on in the game as opposed to the people who are at home. And then it shouldn't be that way.
I mean, the bottom line is the replay system is a backup system for the officials on the field anyway. So let the fans see what they're looking at. I mean, why not? That if it's supposed to correct any wrongs, then allow them to do it. Because what happens with Jack and me, and you'll get a kick out of this, Corey, is that the fans below us in those sections turn around and look at us, and of course we'll look at the replay. We have a monitor in the booth, and we do the gladiator thumbs up, thumbs down thing to let them know if it's good or bad. So. I think it's one of the smarter moves that they've made. It actually is fan friendly, and it has to be that way. First games are tonight. Big picture, Corey, what's the state of college football today in your mind?
Well, I think obviously the SEC is just a notch above everybody else in terms of winning championships. And
yep.
when I look at what Nick Saban has done, 3 out of 4, 2 in a row. I've said this before, and you know, I know there's a lot of Joe Paterno fans in the region who might disagree because they would still maybe put Joe at the top of the list or near the top. I think Nick Saban's the greatest college football coach of all time, Steve. And I would put the resume up against anything. To win 3 out of 4 in this day and age, and he's won 4 in 9 years in the toughest environment that college football has ever seen, in the toughest conference. I look at what Alabama has done, and it's remarkable. I mean, it truly is. These words get thrown around too much. Incredible, great, remarkable. But it is truly remarkable what Alabama's been able to accomplish. And then I go back to the end of last year. This is what is fascinating. Alabama is not in the national championship game. If Oregon and Kansas State don't both lose, mm-hmm. how amazing is that? That Alabama was clearly the best team, but it took, I think it was the next to last week, but it took Oregon and K-State both losing for Alabama to get in the game, and that's why we desperately needed a playoff, because you can't have an Alabama team that's obviously better than everyone else sitting at home, because Notre Dame, for goodness sake, which had no business being on the same field as Alabama, yeah. was able to run the table, beating Pitt barely, which they shouldn't have done on a bogus pass interference call, barely beating Purdue. That's why when you ask me the state of college football, I can't wait for the playoffs to start next year.
Yeah, I'm same here, because, I mean, now, conversely, Alabama won a national championship in a year where they were not even their divisional champ.
That's true. That's correct.
So, I mean, that also happened. The only thing I would couch the Saban part with in your commentary is I would have to take his Michigan State years into account.
Fair enough. But I think Mark D'Antonio is disproving this a little bit. But that's a tough job.
That's a tough job. I'm just saying it's a tough job. I would at least take that into account as a full body of work. What he's done at Alabama in what is the toughest conference in three of the last 4 years, that's one of the truly great runs anybody's had, and he has his team back at number one right now. And he's done
obviously not to dismiss Bear Bryant, but he had 130 players on his team. He could go take every player to prevent him from going to Auburn or anywhere else, and college football was not remotely close to being an even playing field back then.
Right, and now you have 85 scholarships across the board. Johnny Manziel, how do you feel, first of all? I think people were surprised at my opinion about the Ohio State guy selling their memorabilia. I said, it's their stuff. that's how I viewed it. It was actually their stuff. How'd you feel about the possibility that he did sell it and then the penalty Texas A&M gave him?
Well, there are two separate issues. This is America. I mean, we should have certain rights. And I don't have any trouble saying that he should be able to sell his autograph. I mean, that's to rob somebody in this country of that ability is silly. But those are the rules.
Corey, here's the other part of that, though, that always baffles me. Who'd want to buy it? That's what gets me. Who would want to buy it? But that's a separate issue.
Log on to eBay. You'll see these figures, people. But the point is, Steve, there are rules in place. He broke, in my opinion,
yeah.
And I ranted about this for 20 minutes yesterday, so I'll condense this very quickly. The NCAA is a pathetic, laughable, disgraceful, unethical, hypocritical organization. It might be one of the worst organizations in this entire country. I think the NCAA is
that's condensed.
Fraud. It's a joke. It is completely embarrassing the way they have ruled in this particular situation. They want to see Johnny Manziel, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, on the field against Alabama in a couple weeks. I think the NCAA, and I felt this way long before what happened at Penn State, and obviously what happened at Penn State makes a lot of people feel this way, but you take a look at the slap on the wrist with Oregon. Well, we can't tick off Phil Knight and his little mini pro football team he's got up there with $400 million of his own money with Oregon. Let's not upset Phil Knight because maybe he won't pay college football coaches around the country. So let's slap Oregon on the wrist. Let's not look into North Carolina. Let's take a decade to decide what's going on in Miami, but let's get rid of this Johnny Manziel situation very quickly, sweep it under the rug. Like I said, I went on for 20 minutes about this yesterday, Steve. I think the NCAA is a pathetic disgrace.
This appears to be condensed. Corey, I think the NCAA has a lot of issues that internally they need to take care of first. I think they need to take care of their house first, and then I think they can start taking care of other houses. But that's a different time and a different day for me to talk about that.
You know what's sad, Steve? Everybody kind of says, well, all these football programs should separate and, join their own college entity or whatever. Eh. Well, then you'd have the wild, wild west.
Yeah, you would.
There'd be no way to police it. So what's sad is that this disgraceful NCAA situation we have it's the best we've got. Because if everybody just goes off and forms their own college football union, what would prevent anybody from being SMU all over again?
Well, I think what they need to do, Corey, frankly, is that they need to go back and they need to have sit down and have a rules convention and have the coaches actively involved in a rules convention as to what is what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And then really sit down and really look at the rules about maybe signing, about the rules of memorabilia, the rules dealing with stipends and so forth. They need to sit down, get serious, get the coaches involved as to what is realistic and practical, and they need to start with page one, and they need to put together something that's a common sense rule book for this century as opposed to what maybe should have been what was in place in the previous century.
You're absolutely right. One of the best things, and really one of the only good things I can think that the NCAA in terms of rulings has made, was that Marine a couple weeks ago where they decided, okay, our rule book was out of date in this particular policy, and they allowed him to play because common sense prevailed there.
But I think Corey, I think pressure made that happen. The second the story got out and they looked bad, they changed their mind. I don't think common sense took over there. I think they sat back and went, uh-oh, that we blew it.
Steve, I think you're absolutely right. And let's take that one step further. Since Penn State, since the rulings against Penn State and the sanctions against Penn State,
I get
the sense that they have really tried to take it easy on everybody since then because they don't want that public pressure of everybody coming down on them, dropping the hammer. Would you agree with that, Steve?
No, I have felt that ever since the Penn State thing, I think there was a realization there that maybe, like, uh-oh. And all of a sudden, everybody started turning about, what are you guys doing here? And I think they've really eased off a lot since. The deal with the former Marine at Middle Tennessee State, you know, somebody sat back and made that ruling and said, okay, here it is. And then all of a sudden, the backlash, and in 24 hours, they went, oh, man, we blew it. And to their credit, they didn't stick to it. To their credit, they did say, you know, you have to give somebody credit when they go, you know what, we're wrong. He's in.
Yeah, I agree. That's one good instance I can think of that the NCAA has actually made the right call.
Corey, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Corey Geiger, Altoona Mirror. He's going to be joining us on a weekly basis, by the way. A little point-counterpoint between the two of us. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. A week from today, we welcome back an old friend to the show. You'll find out when we get to next week. On News Radio 1070, WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on Pre-Auction Blowout.
Like a Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, SEL 11995, 2006 Pontiac Solstice two-door convertible, super low miles, only 15,521. 2011 Hyundai Sonata, 2.4-liter hybrid for just 17,887. A 2010 Honda Odyssey five-door EXL, 22,775. 2011 Lincoln MKZ, four-wheel drive, four-door, 34,822. And a 2010 Cadillac DTS, four-door sedan, 24,595. Call 888-536-8017.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Right side, lowers the shoulder, touchdown, Penn State, the Nittany Lions take the lead.
That's the one you were looking for earlier, right?
I don't think I said touchdown Shikellamy at all, did I?
I don't, what did you say again?
No, Penn State!
Oh, that's right, you're right.
Well, at least by the time I'm done, they're trotting out the extra point team. When you're done, they're kicking off. All right.
It makes the game move much faster my way.
It really cuts down the verbiage.
It does.
Stone, Penn State.
It's just not the same.
No, there are a couple more fans there.
Yeah, that's the one thing I can't that I definitely cannot compete with is background noise.
A couple quick notes. They're going to do all the replays in the stadium now. You'll get to see what they're seeing in the replay booth.
Good.
Essentially. Which is about time. I mean, it's a backup system. The crowd is not going to influence the replay officials. I mean, they're smart. First of all, they're enclosed in glass to begin with, so they can barely hear you. You know, and, you know, number two, I mean, what's obvious to you is obvious to them. It's all right.
I will miss the thumbs up, thumb down from you and Jack, though.
Well, no, because we get it. We'll do it faster. But they'll show it. Now, penalties, you can't replay a penalty. So that's different. So you have that there. And also, my point on the NCAA is this. They really need to sit down, and they need to put together a brand new rule book from page one. From page one, they need to. Because common sense rules in the new millennium are different now compared to the rules that you needed in the previous century.
Yeah, but the first couple of words of that sentence is the problem. Common sense.
Well, if you have it and the coaches are there, you have a better shot at common sense.
That's not what the C stands for in NCAA, though.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And next Thursday, we welcome back good old friends. I'm anxious to talk about them next week. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. I believe Mark writes his own promos, doesn't he?
Yeah, I believe so.
Does he believe half of what he says?
I don't believe that, no.
No, no. No. I mean, Reichley's what?
Let's see. How did he word that? That's entertaining. Let me see. Hang on.
Said he's a good listener.
How did he? Let's see. How exactly did he word that? Hold on one second here. Let's find that again.
Greetings, Mark Lawrence from WKOK's On the Mark program tomorrow morning. Ben Reichley will make the case that he's a natural-born free thinker and not ultra-conservative. He's a great listener and welcomes all viewpoints. It's On the Mark.
See, 8:30 to 10 that's the part WKOK, right there.
WKOK. Welcomes all viewpoints.
That's the part that I don't know if he buys himself or not. Not Reichley, but Mark. I'm not sure.
Mark had a tone. He had a tone.
It might have been. Don't you know sarcasm when you hear it?
Had a tone to it. Well done. 800-795-9565. They need to. I was asked this question. I believe it was the Williamsport stop I made when I was on the speaking tour. I only have one stop left.
One stop on the Steve Jones tour.
I'm in Harrisburg Tuesday night. Camp Hill. So the Radisson.
Autographs are $50 a piece.
Well, I'm not gonna bring $500 with me just so I can sign 10 times.
No, that's what I was charging for them. I don't know what you were gonna charge.
I think they need to. And then somebody asked me, if I was running the NCAA for a day, what would I do? And I said, the given is the Penn State thing. I said, you know, we know that.
I'd fire the guy in charge.
But I said what I would do is I would order that the rule book be taken and scrapped and that we start over again. The rule book is too thick, too many addendums, too many twists and turns. I think you need to have the coaches actively involved as to what is realistic in recruiting, what's a realistic rule, what's not realistic, and I think you have to craft your rules that way. Because you need to have rules today that deal with social media. You need to have rules in terms of contact. You need to have rules in terms of stipends or the lack thereof. You need to have rules that deal with a wide variety of things, contact by boosters, contact by anybody else. You need to have all these rules that fit today and not fit 1950.
And I said, that's what I would do. I would order a complete overhaul of the rule book starting with page one. And I think that would be important. I think the NCAA needs to do that. They're a huge organization. They have a big job. It is not an easy job when you have so many entities to police. When you can't find people, okay? And again, part of this, you know, how do you dole out a sanction? Do you sanction innocent people left and right, or do you sanction the individuals responsible? And that would be a very important part of that. You know, when you talk about sanctioning a program, can't go to a bowl, you know, and we know what the situation is at Penn State, can't go to a bowl game, can't play for the championship, taking away scholarships and so forth. It makes absolutely no sense at all that Penn State is sanctioned right now. None. I mean, why should Christian Hackenberg or Tyler Ferguson have to pay the price of nothing? What did they do? What did Bill O'Brien do? What? What did Mike Hall and Glenn Carson and Daquan Jones do? What did they do? Why should they have to not go to a bowl game? And by the way, what rule did Penn State violate? Where's the rule that was violated by Penn State? So you have to individualize rules. You don't, for example, in the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, those are professional leagues. When they sanction, how do they sanction? They sanction individuals. They didn't suspend the entire Yankees team for 211 games. They suspended Alex Rodriguez. Oh, and by the way, if A-Rod gets the 660 home runs, he gets a $6 million bonus. And guess what? If he gets a $6 million bonus, he puts the Yankees over the cap. Even when he does well, he hurts them.
He's a detriment.
There are not many people in the world you can say that about. It's when true. He helps us, he hurts us. I mean, how many people have that kind of talent? But when they sanction someone, they sanction the individual. I felt that when Tennessee sanctioned Bruce Pearl for 8 games, when the SEC sanctioned Bruce Pearl for 8 games, that was the first step in the right direction as to how to do it. And then Pearl was knocked out of coaching for 2 years by the NCAA. Tennessee changed coaches. The players that were still there, they get to play. They made, you know, they had a good year last year. UConn, Jim Calhoun. They didn't just suspend him for 3 games. They suspended him for the first 3 Big East games a year and a half ago. You go after the individuals who are involved. If the player's on the take, the player is permanently barred. If a coach or an assistant coach or even a staff member is involved in making that happen, they too are barred. Games, seasons, or lifetime, depending on the severity. Target those involved. You threaten livelihoods and jobs at that point. You know, put the entire program on probation. I mean, that makes no sense at all. Zero. What did John Urschel do to not be in a bowl game this year? 4.0, working on the second degree, first team all Big Ten, makes one of the great speeches you'll ever hear a student athlete make to an entire luncheon. Sits there and talks about derivatives. I was talking to him about derivatives yesterday, and I was talking to Mike Hull about stock futures and what he thought of Wall Street, because he's a finance major. What did those two individuals do wrong to not go to a bowl game?
I have a quick question for you here, and I don't mean to interrupt your run there, but the Johnny Manziel situation isn't an NCAA sanction. Am I correct with that? This is a Texas A&M sanction?
It's a Texas A&M sanction agreed to by the NCAA.
Okay, so basically Texas A&M said, we're going to suspend him for a half a game. Mm-hmm. And the NCAA said, okay, that sounds fair. Mm-hmm. What in the world is a half-game suspension? I mean, it's if you either did something that violated a rule, you did it. If you didn't do it to violate a rule, then you didn't do it. A half-game suspension says, well, you might have done something wrong, but we're not quite sure, so we're going to punish just to make sure we cover ourselves. This makes a half-game suspension by either entity, the university or the NCAA, doesn't make sense.
You're absolutely correct.
If he did something wrong, then the punishment that goes with that crime, based on the rule, I shouldn't use crime, but violation, that goes with that rule should be enforced. If he didn't do it, there shouldn't be any.
To me, the justice should have been handed out by Kevin Sumlin, the head coach, and not the NCAA and not the school. As the head coach and the CEO, in sitting down with his student athlete, if he determined there's something not quite above board, then he should be the one that's handing out the suspensions. And the NCAA sat down with him for, what, 5.5 to 6 hours?
5.5. Yeah, I heard 5.5 right. And 6 hours.
And they gave a thumbs up to a half-game suspension.
Have you ever heard of a half-game suspension for anything?
No.
At any level of college sports or any college sport?
Sure it does. It happens all the time. I did a basketball game here with Michigan State where Adrian Payne and Brandon Dawson – got into a fight, and then they lined in. They were suspended for the first half of the game by Tom Izzo.
Okay, but who that was going to say? The coach made that suspension, correct?
Right, yeah.
That I don't see it as this. I don't think was the coach that made this decision.
No, he's not. I'm saying he should have been
right,
the one.
Right, and I agree with you. But that's where the half-game suspension doesn't make any sense. This is the institution doing this and or the NCAA in the example we're talking about here. What you're talking about is the coach making that decision, and that you can then do for a half or something. That makes more sense to me.
Look, this is a plea bargain, okay?
Well, that's a great, call.
This is the compromise between the power entities. Kid's stuck in the middle. The coach is stuck in the middle. Okay, he gets a half, right? Which means he gets to play the second half. That way, with the all-important Alabama game, which takes place next week, is played, he has experience under his belt. Should be entertaining. And a lot of people will make money off that game.
But I have to ask this question, and maybe you may call me a cynic. If his name was Johnny Benchwarmer, would he have gotten a half-game suspension?
If his name was Johnny Benchwarmer, they wouldn't have investigated.
And that may be.
This is all because he is currently, among players, the biggest name in college football.
You're saying he's the investigation and the punishment were because of his status?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Because I feel if this was somebody who was not a starter and may have made the same thing.
Okay, who wants to buy Johnny Benchwarmer's autograph?
I understand that. See, and you're right.
Okay.
That's very true.
That's where the Olbermans and the Kornheisers of the world, as they pontificate, don't have a total grasp on college football, on who all the players are. For every Johnny Manziel, okay, on that football team, for every Johnny Manziel, there are 20 guys that this is the end of their football playing career.
Very true.
Okay? Okay, so you're talking, I'm talking 120 guys on the team. I'm talking about six probably moving on and playing, and the other 114 not. Okay? So for every Johnny Manziel, there are 20 of his teammates that are playing, that will play their last games at Texas A&M and College Station, whether it's this year, the year after, or the year after.
The other question I have to ask you, though, Steve, is, and I have my thought, what's yours? If it were, and I'm going to say we've mentioned it before on the program, Alabama, that was the next game on the schedule for A&M, would they have selected that punishment now, or would they have waited?
I mean, if Alabama were this week?
If Alabama was this week and Rice was next week. I'll bet you Texas A&M would have waited, and the punishment would have come out next week.
Could very well be.
That's just me being cynical, maybe.
Could very well be, but it's not this week.
No, it's not.
So, you know, Rice is this week. So they've done what they've done. You know, hopefully the kid can play some ball, go out, have a good time doing it. And, you know, I mean, A&M's going to have probably a record crowd on hand for that game. And, you know,
I guess the problem
the entire country's going to be glued to it. If that kid does not play the game next week, he doesn't play the game next week, that the ratings cut in half.
That's true.
I mean, the kid's going to play now. And what this suspension is telling me is that they can't find it. Like, there's a lot of connect the dots here. And they can connect some of the dots, but they can't connect all of it. But there are enough dots they can connect that makes it suspicious. But they don't have the hard evidence to put the hammer down. How about that? That's what this tells me.
And if that's the case, then I think you kind of have to handle it the way you would in a court of law. And maybe that's the wrong way to look at it. But if you don't have enough evidence to convict in a court of law, nothing happens and there's no punishment. If you don't have enough evidence and you think it happened, how can you punish somebody for that?
You can't. You can't.
And this is where the inconsistency for the NCAA comes in.
Look, the Oregon thing was a slap in the wrist. It's taking Miami to do the Miami thing forever.
Mississippi State.
Ever since the Penn State thing, you notice how they've lightened up on everything?
It's been
they have backed way off. Because, I mean, you know, they blew it with the Marine at Middle Tennessee State. The only reason that kid's playing ball is because of pressure. Because, obviously, they made we made a decision, done, boom. All of a sudden, they called us on it. Now, to their credit, they weren't stubborn, to their credit, and they backed off and they're letting him play now.
I agree with what was said earlier, the fact that if you don't have the NCAA, it's the Wild Wild West. It's a great example. That's a great analogy.
It's chaos. There's no doubt about that.
But there's got to be something better.
But the organization needs to redo the football and men's basketball rule books. Okay? Simple as that. From page one. Today, we're at the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Roads 11 and 15, Humble's Wharf, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Kevin was wondering what I was going to do for the Open on Saturday.
Well, it's, you know, an opening game.
When they point, I'll say something.
You know what my favorite Steve Jones touchdown call is? I wish I had it.
What was that?
It's the one on the opening kickoff, not last season. I think it was the season before. It was 2011.
Yeah.
Because it was the start of the, what was it, 125th
season.
Yeah, 125th season. It was the kickoff return for a touchdown.
Yeah, I said the 125th season of Penn State football starts with a bang.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Yeah, whatever.
That was my favorite.
Well, maybe the fans don't have a favorite. So, I don't know. you have all sorts of moments. I mean, you know, the 324, the 400, the 409, the Larry Johnson 2000.
Now, the favorite, one of my favorite endings was gets the win they so well, so, how was it?
I've heard that, you know what?
The win they deserve, but you worded it differently.
You know what? I've heard that so many times now. I mean, like, so many times. But I don't know, like, 150 times, because Channel 3, they put these tapes together all the time. Well, it's my office in the morning. Oh, my goodness, I'm so sick of it. Because I can hear it in the back.
The 25th season of Penn State football is underway.
Here it is.
Chaz Powell at the 5, to his right 10, 15, 20, through a hole 25, 30, 40. He's to the 50, Powell to the 40, the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, and the 125th season of Penn State football starts with a bang. A 95-yard kickoff return for a touchdown.
Wow. Give that guy money.
That was my favorite touchdown. My favorite call was the Purdue game where they were flipping the ball all over, where all 11 guys on the field touched the football. Yeah. Nothing beats that one. Nothing.
Well, if doggone Gaines had scored, it would have been, you know, come on, man. Got tripped up by Curtis Painter. Cut me a break. Wrecked the whole thing.
And by the way, it's somewhere on our page, stevejonesshow.com, and YouTube. If you do a search for Steve Jones and Purdue, it'll come up.
Oh, really?
And I mean, it matches the video right on.
Oh. Yeah, the right guys touched it. I got lucky.
I know Jack's even impressed in listening to this, because there's a little cut in there. He says something about it.
Jack. Jack's the greatest. And I always tell my class, never be afraid to work with somebody who makes you better. Well, Jack would make anybody better. So would Dick. All right. Tomorrow, more fun frivolity. Trying to get Mark Brennan on the show tomorrow. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. He's definitely coming on tomorrow. Talk about your Steelers.
Well, you're going to have to cover it, because probably about 4 o'clock I'm checked out because I'm in football mode at that point. You remember that from last year.
Are you physically leaving?
No, just mentally.